And welcome back. They say the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, and when that step is taken by two people with vision and commitment at the same time and with the same objective, it's an easier journey and a lot more likely to be a successful one. Much of the history of St. Louis public housing was written by two people, community activist Gene King and Richard Barron, chairman and chief executive officer of McCormick Barron Salazar Development, Inc. That history, their history, is documented in a new film titled Envisioning Home, which will premiere here tomorrow evening as part of the St. Louis International Film Festival. With me in studio to talk about it and their work and the film are Gene King and Richard Barron and author and filmmaker Daniel Blake Smith. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Nice to be here.
Great to be here, Don.
Gene, let me begin with you. Give me some sense, if you will, of what it was like, I hate to say it, almost 50 years ago or some 50 years ago, as far as public housing in the St. Louis community is concerned.
The Housing Authority was strapped for money. There were no rent subsidies at that time, and residents were about to be receiving the third in rent increase in about a year's time. They had received notice. At that time, I myself was a public housing resident, and I think it was Carr Square and Vaughn, the first developments, who sort of started their rent strike and asked the other seven conventional public housing residents to join them in this rent strike.
Was there sufficient public housing at that time to meet the need?
There might have been sufficient public housing, but every public housing development was half, if not more, empty at that time. And so there still was a need for public housing, but the Housing Authority didn't have the wherewithal to get the units ready for occupancy. So they had a tremendous waiting list, but most people didn't want to go to them anyway at that time because of the condition they were in, and they heard about this additional rent strike, so they were looking for housing elsewhere.
Richard, what brought the two of you together?
Well, I came to St. Louis in 1968 in the summer, and I was on a legal services fellowship. So I was here at the Legal Aid Society, and the residents who began to talk about a strike, there were a number, as Gina suggested, Bertha Mason and Loretta Hall and some of the residents from Carr Square and Vaughn came to our offices at Legal Services, and I was the last guy in, and so I was asked to sit in on the meeting. And there were residents from Cochrane there as well. Carl Hilgert at Fellowship Center was very involved early on as a resource to the residents. And so that's how it started. And from that meeting, there were hundreds of them that followed.
What specifically did you want to happen?
Well, it was really the residents. I mean, we had reached a point in St. Louis, and it was not at all different than what was going on nationally, where the residents simply didn't have the wherewithal to pay any more rent. The welfare benefits in Missouri were meager, and they were paying 50% and 60% of their incomes for rent every month, and they had no money left to buy food and clothes for their kids. So what I wanted to happen, which was really what the residents wanted, was the rents to be rolled back so that they were no more than 25% of a family's income. There was great frustration with the Housing Authority, and so one of the other principal demands was to have the Housing Authority separated from the Redevelopment Authority in St. Louis and to create a new Board of Commissioners that would have tenant representation on it, and then to begin to look at the possibility of the residents themselves taking on some of the site management.
You know, I didn't come to St. Louis until 1971, but there was still a lot of talk and a lot of activity going on. But the name that I remember and associate so much with this was Buck Jones.
Right.
What role did he play in all this?
Well, he was a minister at Transfiguration Church, which sat tucked into the Vaughan public housing development. And so Buck was a resource to the residents at Carr Square and Vaughan. And Buck was involved in that role. And he met frequently, but he really didn't have what I would describe as a major role in the strike as Gene did or some of the residents on the north side.
But he did have the ability, Gene, to capture the television cameras and the newspaper reporters, didn't he? Yeah.
Well, to some extent, he was really a spokesperson for Vaughn and Carr Square.
Was he helpful?
Perhaps to them, but he didn't. He wasn't actively involved in the strike.
Okay. I'm going to take a break and come back and talk about the film in just a moment. Let's do that. We are talking about the film festival envisioning, the film festival presentation of the film Envisioning Home, which is going to be presented tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, right? Correct, at the High Point Theater.
High Point Theater, 7 p.m., oh, yeah.
Okay, we'll have more about that a little bit later. We've got to take this break. We'll come back and talk about that in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We are talking about Cinema St. Louis's 2012 St. Louis International Film Festival presentation of Envisioning Home, a documentary which really talks about Gene King and Richard Barron and the role they played in public housing half a century ago and since in the St. Louis area. That is going to be presented tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock at the High Point Theater. Filmmaker Daniel Blake Smith is also with us in studio. And Daniel, what about this story attracted your attention and made you decide to make a movie about it?
Well, it's got a convergence of a lot of things that matter a lot to me, and I hope this gets conveyed to audiences and they feel the same. And that is a story that really matters. I think public housing is an important story. It gets at issues of racism and poverty. So it's a great story about St. Louis that went national because what Gene and Richard have done nationally with the communities they've built since then showcased how mixed income and resident empowerment can make a big difference. So it has that thematic thing that I think it's really important. But it's not just high importance thematic stuff. It's also characters. Even in a radio context, you can sense how vivid and exciting and interesting these two people are as characters. So as a filmmaker, both myself and the director, Jason Epperson, who's a very gifted filmmaker from Kentucky that worked a lot of magic in making this come to life on the screen, we were blessed with two characters whose story and whose relationship we can follow through time and amidst a lot of tumult in the 60s to an inspiring and very effective closing. It's not really closing. They're still working together. But so it gives us characters we can follow and become engaged with and people doing really hard, brave work that matters.
What sort of visuals do you have? This was a long time ago.
Well, we have stock footage. Fortunately, this is not pre-photographic. I've worked in projects where they're pre-1850 and so forth. We got a lot of photos, a lot of videos, video from that era. And we did some creative, I think, effective recreations for those areas that we don't have visuals for. And then, of course, we interview people in the live present era, too. So it's a nice mixture of interviews and I think evocative photos and videos and some striking recreations as well.
Richard Barron, you alluded to this, but this is referred to as a dangerous and volatile time. In what ways?
Well, it was, of course, part of what was happening across the United States in the late 60s. St. Louis was fortunate that it hadn't had a riot. There were riots going on in many of the major cities around the United States. And it was a very hard time in St. Louis. The conditions in these developments were deplorable. Pruitt-Igoe was absolutely a disaster. And those developments all surrounded the downtown. There was real concern here among the business community. And Mayor Cervantes then really didn't know what to do. He had very little relationship with the public housing program in St. Louis. It was really a stepchild here, as it was in many cities throughout the United States. And it was very charged. There were hundreds of residents that went out on a rent strike. The housing authority was going broke. And no one knew what to do, really. And it was probably the most important thing that happened was Cervantes had enough foresight to ask Carol Gibbons of the Teamsters to intervene in the strike and to try to mediate it to see if there wasn't a way to resolve it, because conditions were getting worse all the time.
Gene, what about your role? What specifically was your role?
To organize the residents specifically for a rent strike. They voted me in as their leader. Mm-hmm. And so to put together all of our demands, work together on those, attend meetings with city officials, and constantly meeting with residents, set up bank accounts at the bank to hold the monies that were being withheld from paying rent, to make certain that the residents did not get evicted for going on a rent strike, and basically meeting with HUD and Washington, wherever we had to go, to get some answers and some help to bring St. Louis rent strike to a close, with the residents receiving the kinds of services they were entitled to.
What was the reaction to the city, Richard, to these efforts?
Well, as I said, Mayor Cervantes and most of the political representatives in St. Louis were terrified. Mm-hmm. They had never seen anything like this happen. And as a matter of fact, the St. Louis strike was really singular in the United States when hundreds of low-income families voted to strike and to protest the conditions. So basically, the city administration at that time was not really capable of handling it, and we understood that the real resolution of this was going to have to come through federal legislation on the one hand, and ironically enough, George Romney was HUD secretary during this period of time, so we had quite a bit of interaction with his office out of HUD.
What was the risk to residents going through all of this?
Well, it was a real risk that they would be evicted, that ultimately they'd have no place to go. They would be homeless. And there were many, many very low-income families living in the developments. And so part of what we did at Legal Services really was to jam the court system and to stop the eviction actions which the Housing Authority was filing against the residents who were not paying the rent to the authority. There were hundreds and hundreds of eviction actions filed by the St. Louis Housing Authority during this period.
Gene, the residents certainly knew this risk. So I'm getting to the point that it required a significant amount of courage to take this on.
Yes, it did. Yeah. Because, as a matter of fact, the very first day that we began to withhold rents in my development, we were using St. Stephen's Church right there at 14th and Park and as a place to hold meetings. And as people came out to come to the rent strike meeting to bring their first rent payments, Housing Authority had three evictions sitting right on the street in their pathway. They were quite afraid, but we kept assuring them that something was going to happen and they would not be evicted. Sure enough, it did.
Daniel, this is the stuff of which drama is comprised, right?
Yeah, you've got to have good conflict. Invented or not, then there was nothing you had to invent here. There was so much real trauma and uncertainty and risk at stake that it makes this story a story really of courage, which has always been one of my favorite kinds of themes to explore. And I didn't have to, thankfully, invent anything because in the case of Richard and Gene and the people who followed them and worked alongside them, it was their living color every day.
Again, that film is going to be premiered tomorrow at 7 o'clock at the High Point Theater. I'd like to invite members of our listening audience to get into the conversation. Our time is somewhat limited, but if you have questions or comments about a public housing experience, we would love to hear from you. I'd also like to move it a little bit away from what happened at the time of the film to what it led to. And Richard, you're a developer, and you've been involved in public housing issues for a long time. What was this as a first step? How would you describe this as a first step and what it led to ultimately?
Well, I think the important part of it was the aftermath of the strike. Once the strike was settled, there was a real concern about what happened next. And that moved us into a program of tenant management Carr Square and Darst, which Gene was the manager, were the first two. The Ford Foundation got involved with us. Harold Gibbons created a nonprofit, the St. Louis Civic Alliance for Housing, which was a resource group of business leaders, church leaders, leaders from the black community, and they provided stewardship for the rebuilding of the Housing Authority after the strike. And for me personally, I began McCormick Barron with Terry McCormick in 1973. And many of the things that were developed by the residents as part of their effort to provide services, both on the south side in Darst and on Carr Square, and subsequently in Cochrane, under the leadership of Bertha Gilkey, were ideas that were incorporated in our developments across the United States as we began to go to different cities. And we continue to do that all over the country. But the human capital side of our work is really led by Sandy Moore and Urban Strategies. And they're dealing with schools and health care and early education and after-school programming and the arts. And all of these things were ultimately part of the evolution of what happened from the first days after the strike that occurred here in the public housing sites.
You mentioned Bertha Gilkey's name. That brings back a lot of memories.
Sure.
We had a lot of traffic with Bertha in the 70s and into the early 80s. You know, Gene, one of the things that we've seen happen to public housing here in St. Louis, and Richard is certainly a big part of this, is the fact that somewhere along the line it was decided that high-rise was not the way to go. And I guess we can go back to the days of the rent strike to really look at the evolution of public housing in St. Louis, can't we?
Yes, we can. Well, it didn't take us long to figure out that high-rise public housing for families was a no-no, should never have been built. And to bring that forward to where we are now, the Housing Authority is in the process of vacating its very last high-rise building and getting the residents situated into a new development down on North Sarah so that we can tear down the final high-rise family building. That was, I think, the design of these buildings was as much a downfall of the success of public housing as anything could have been. Children had nowhere to play. Elevators and hallways became playgrounds and the like. Elevators were skipped, stopped on one floor and not on the other, and you could only ride up so far and then try to bring your groceries, your furniture, whatever. It was hard to get furniture deliveries because they had to be walked up several floors. And it just came to us that high-rise public housing for families just wasn't workable.
Richard, ironic, in as much as Pruitt-Igoe back in the 50s was considered probably the very best example of the way to deal with people who needed public housing.
That's right. Well, social housing has gone through an evolution. A lot of the ideas for the social housing programs in the States came from Europe. There was a lot of interest in some of the architecture back then through Corbusier and these valleys that were supposed to be these large islands. And there was this notion of more density for families and kids. And as Gene has suggested, I mean, it just was not a very workable situation at all, which has led to both the designs that we now use in the various developments here in St. Louis and also in terms of changing the economic mix in these communities, which was very important and something that we felt very strongly about, that we had to bring higher income families and individuals into these communities in addition to families who were public housing eligible so that we got a much better economic mix in these neighborhoods that allowed other things to begin to happen.
So now we're looking at the townhouse kinds of situations, exactly. Garden apartments,
correct.
And that sort of thing.
Right.
Daniel, does the film get into any of this? I mean, I know we're talking about a specific period here, but is this somehow at least hinted at in
Oh, most definitely. We took our film crew to Pittsburgh, New Orleans, San Francisco, East Los Angeles, just four of the, 35 or more communities where McCormick Barron and other entities like them have begun to implement this mixed income model that really Richard and Gene pioneered here in St. Louis. Now, we give the viewer a very clear and up-close look at how attempts to make more humane, safe, and defensible living environments are actually happening now, and the roots of them go back to the St. Louis rent strike.
Do we have, Gene, a happier, more satisfied public housing community in St. Louis today?
I would think so, yeah. Everywhere we've rebuilt public housing, people tend to enjoy it because they got space, they got amenities that they never dreamed they would have. If you look at one of our public housing units and compare it to one of the market rate units, you cannot tell them apart. They all look alike. And all our public housing people, they're interspersed throughout our communities. They're not all in a bunch somewhere. And they've learned, that's what urban strategies does. Richard's idea, of course, has always been to build better housing. I always saw that the residents to occupy those houses needed rebuilding. Thus, we do that through urban strategies and the services that we provide so that the residents that are going there are able to sustain the units that they're living in, and they enjoy it all over.
Richard, there has to be a great deal of gratification, satisfaction in having played a role that has brought what we had in the 60s to where we are today.
Yeah. Well, I feel very good about it, and I feel very good about our folks at McCormick Barron Salazar, the younger staff and individuals working on this now have done a superb job, and we're very proud of these communities, and our two most recent in St. Louis, North Sarah and Arlington Grove, are I think, lovely. They've been designed beautifully, and residents are happy, and when they're happy, we're happy.
We're going to have to leave it at that with the reminder that, once again, that the film that we've been talking about, Envisioning Home, will air tomorrow at the High Point Theater at 7 o'clock. It features, of course, the work of Gene King, one of our guests in studio. Richard Barron, also with us, and filmmaker Daniel Blake Smith is also with us in studio, and he's one of the driving forces behind the film. I thank you all so much for being with us. Congratulations on the film, and congratulations on a pretty nice career that Richard and Gene have had here in St. Louis.
Thank you.
Well
thank
done,
you,
as they say. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Ross King about his new book examining Leonardo da Vinci's masterpiece, The Last Supper. We'll also meet with Thelma Golden, the director of the Studio Museum in Harlem, and talk to her about race, arts, and culture. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.